Good morning, and thank you all for holding. Your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion of today's conference. I would like to remind all parties the call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And I would now like to turn the call over to Tom Skinner. Thank you. You may begin.
Thanks, Elon, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of another CDC Vital Signs report. This report on overdoses of prescription opioid pain relievers and other drugs among women, United States, 1999 to 2010. We're joined by the director of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden, who will provide some opening remarks, and then we'll be joined by Dr. Chris Jones, a health scientist here at CDC, and Dr. Karen Mack, a behavioral scientist here at CDC, who will help out with questions if necessary. Dr. Frieden?
Good morning or afternoon, everybody, and thanks very much for joining us. Each month, as you know, we focus on a specific issue of a critical health importance to the country and what we can do to address it. This month, we're focusing on one of the very few things in our health status that's getting worse, and it's getting worse quickly. That's the growing problem of prescription drug overdoses, and this month we're focusing on women. Prescription drug overdose deaths have skyrocketed in women. Mothers, wives, sisters, and daughters are dying from overdoses at rates that we have never seen before. We are also seeing not only deaths, but a great increase in the number of emergency department visits for drug misuse or drug abuse, including opiate overdose or opiate misuse. These are really troubling numbers, and I have to say that when I look across all of the different health problems that we track at CDC, there are very few that are getting worse, and there are even fewer that are affecting so many different parts of the population and the age groups of the population. The increase in opiate overdoses and opiate overdose deaths is directly proportional to the increase in prescribing of painkillers. Opioids or narcotic pain relievers such as Vicodin, OxyContin, or Apana, and methadone are increasing to an extent that we would not have anticipated and that could not possibly be clinically indicated. These are dangerous medications. They should be reserved for situations like severe cancer pain, where they can provide extremely important and essential palliation. But in many other situations, the risks far outweigh the benefits. Prescribing an opiate may be condemning a patient to lifelong addiction and life-threatening complications. While men are more likely to die of a prescription opioid overdose, the gap between men and women have been narrowing. In other words, unfortunately, women are catching up in this regard. Since 1999, the percentage of deaths has actually been greater for percentage increase in death has actually been greater for women, 400%, than for men, 265%. And the prescription opioid problem affects women in different ways than it affects men. Women are more likely to have chronic pain, to be prescribed painkillers and other medications, to be given higher doses, and to use them for longer time periods than men. In addition, it may be that this is because some of the most common forms of pain are more prevalent among women, more likely to have abdominal pain, migraine, musculoskeletal pain than men are. And women have particular challenges with prescription opioids. First off, because on average women weigh less, at the same dose they may be more likely to have adverse events from opioids. And second, women of childbearing age, if they're taking opiates and become pregnant, that infant may be born opiate addicted and is at higher risk of having heart malformations from the opiate medication. Prescription opiate overdoses among women are underrecognized, but there's a lot that we can do about it. More than five times as many women died from prescription painkiller overdoses in 2010 compared to 1999, and more than 6,600 women die from a prescription opioid overdose each year. That's nearly twice the number who died from cervical cancer. And there were more than 200,000 emergency department visits for opioid misuse or abuse among women. That's about one every 3 minutes. Contrary to what we expect, this is not just a problem among young women. In fact, the death rate was highest among women aged 45 to 54 among all women. There is good news. There are things that we can do to protect women and to reduce the burden of prescription opiates. The first is to ensure that all healthcare providers recognize that women can be at risk for prescription painkiller overdose. It's not just a problem among men, which is how many doctors and other healthcare providers may think of it currently. So healthcare providers can talk with patients about the risks and benefits of taking prescription painkillers, and follow guidelines for responsible opioid painkiller prescribing, such as screening and monitoring patients for substance abuse and for mental health problems, and use prescription drug monitoring programs to identify patients who may be improperly using prescription painkillers. For their part, states can improve and implement prescription drug monitoring programs. These are programs that track when prescriptions are made so that if a patient is going to two doctors across the street from each other, the second one can find out that it's happened. These programs are just really getting up and running in many states, and they need to do more, states need to do more to ensure that the programs are real-time, they're complete, and they're actively managed so that we identify patients and doctors who need either services to provide drug treatment for patients or information and education for doctors, or if there's illegal activity going on, enforcement. States can also increase access to substance abuse treatment, including getting immediate treatment help for any woman who is pregnant and on opiates. Women do so much to care for their families and keep their families healthy, but they also need to do things to keep themselves healthy. So if you're prescribed prescription pain medicine, use it only as directed by a healthcare provider. Discuss your pregnancy plans with your healthcare provider before taking prescription painkillers, and store prescription drugs in a secure place and dispose of them properly. It's important not to keep prescription medications around the house just in case, and never share prescription drugs with anyone else. The bottom line here is that prescription opioid deaths among women have skyrocketed in the past decade. Stopping the epidemic is everyone's business, and it can be done. Places like Washington State have driven opioid deaths down by more than 20% in just a couple of years. There are important steps that need to be taken at many different levels, and CDC is here to support those efforts. Together, I'm confident we can reduce the risk of overdose among women and men while making sure that patients who have severe cancer pain and other indications that are clear for opioid painkillers have access to safe and effective pain treatment. Thanks, and I'll now turn it over for questions.
Thanks, Dr. Frieden. Alon, I believe we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you, and at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. You will be prompted to record your name, and please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And our first question today is from Jonathan Seary from Fox News.
Thanks for taking my question. Dr. Frieden, you had indicated that doctors are prescribing prescription painkillers at higher rates than before. Is this because there are more drugs on the market? Are more patients needing painkillers? What's driving the trend?
I don't think there's any evidence of a big increase in need for prescription opiates. I think we need to better understand the risks and benefits of these medications. They're dangerous medications. Patients given just a single course may become addicted for life. So I think there's been a trend in the medical profession, and we need to work to reverse that trend. I can tell you that when I went to medical school, the one thing they told me about pain was if you give a patient in pain an opiate painkiller, they will not become addicted. And that was completely wrong. So we have a real need to better understand and ensure that we use these only when necessary. Dr. Jones, would you like to say anything more about this?
This is Chris Jones. I would just add that I think there's been a large push to treat pain, and as Dr. Frieden said, not a lot of information around what are the best ways to do that. So I think opioids certainly have a place in the treatment of pain. Our goal and our work with our partners is really to make sure that they're being used in the right patients, in the right quantities, and in the right dose.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Dan Childs from ABC News.
Hi, thank you for taking our question. One thing that we wanted to check with, because you mentioned that women tend to get higher doses than men, and this would be one of the underlying reasons for the problem, why exactly would women be getting higher doses of these medications? Are there any underlying problems that would lead to this?
We know that women are more likely to have chronic pain, but why women are receiving higher doses when, in fact, they should be, on average, receiving lower doses is something that we don't fully understand, and this is one of the things that we'd like to work with healthcare providers to educate more about.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Lisa Girion from LA Times.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. I had a couple of questions about your comments about what kind of pain and should be treated with opioid painkillers. You said that the amount of narcotic painkillers that are being prescribed right now can't be clinically justified, and I wanted to know what you base that on. And I also wanted to understand a little bit more about the types of pain that you're saying these drugs should be used for.
We've seen a fivefold or more than fivefold increase in prescriptions in the past 10 to 20 years, and we've seen nothing like that in terms of the conditions that would be clear indications for painkillers, so for opiate painkillers. In addition, we know that many people have become addicted because of the large numbers of prescriptions being written and the large numbers of people who have been treated with the prescription painkillers. In fact, today there are more people dying and going to the emergency department from prescription opiates than there are from heroin and cocaine combined. There's nothing in the epidemiology of pain conditions in our society that suggests that there's anything like this increase in painful conditions or this kind of a gap between the need for palliative pain relief in situations like chronic cancer pain or severe acute pain that cannot be controlled by other means that would justify that kind of an increase in prescription opiate use. Dr. Jones, do you want to say anything more on this question?
I think just to add a little bit more information about the particular types of pain. I mean, certainly, as Dr. Frieden said, cancer-related or palliative care, opioids certainly have a role to play there. I think part of what we see is other conditions like fibromyalgia, migraines, other specific types of conditions that may be more common among women. Opioids are often used in those settings, yet the guidelines and other studies looking at the effectiveness of opioids in those conditions really doesn't support their widespread use.
Okay. Can I ask a follow-up?
Yes.
So I hear you saying severe pain and palliative care and cancer pain. I'm not hearing you say chronic moderate pain. Am I right in hearing that you're not saying that? Are you not saying that on purpose? Do you think these drugs should be reserved for severe pain?
No, in the data that we've reviewed, we have not seen that there's a clear indication of these drugs for other conditions. And what we really want to emphasize is the risk and the benefit. These are risky drugs, and there are often other medications and other therapies like physical therapy, exercise, cognitive therapies that can be really very important in addressing chronic pain.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Nadia Kuning from CNN. Nadia, your line is open. Please check your mute feature. We'll move on to the next question. Our next question is from Patty Nehmard from NPR.
Hi, it's Patty Nehmard. Thank you for taking this question. Dr. Frieden, you mentioned Washington State, and what they did to try to manage this problem a little more. Could you just elaborate on what they did? And was it Washington State, was I hearing correctly?
That was correct. Washington State worked with prescribers. It worked with insurers. It worked with their worker compensation program. And they got a consensus on how treatment should be used, when prescription opiates should be used, what some of the alternative treatments are, and what some resources were for patients who are addicted. They then enforced those guidelines through regulation, and they saw, I believe, a 23% reduction in opioid deaths in just about 3 years.
And what did that enforcement, were there any penalties if there were problems?
Dr. Jones?
So what they did was they had voluntary prescribing guidelines that were issued in 2007, subsequently updated in 2010, and then moved to rule in 2012. So they're just now beginning more of the enforcement phase of that. But essentially the rules state that physicians or other prescribers have to take certain steps when treating patients for chronic non-cancer pain, especially around higher doses of opioids. So they're still working through the process of how that would be enforced. But again, they even with their voluntary, really comprehensive approach to addressing the issue, they've seen success in the last several years.
Can I ask a quick follow-up? Or?
Yes, go ahead.
What is it, though, now? I know there's the triplicate form. Isn't that part of the effort to manage prescription painkiller prescriptions nationwide? I mean, I know that – is this beyond that or –
There are various forms of trying to ensure that prescriptions are tracked and tracked appropriately and that fraudulent prescriptions are found. We think probably the most promising approach is to maximize prescription drug monitoring programs, or PDMPs. And these can be done very effectively by mandating registration and use by all prescribers, by requiring that non-pharmacists providers who dispense from their offices also report with the BDMP, to implement real-time data reporting and access so that doctors and can look at what's happening and make sure that they're not inadvertently giving too much medication, and providing reports on high-risk providers and patients to the appropriate providers, regulatory boards, law enforcement agencies in certain circumstances, and to establish interstate sharing, because there are state-to-state challenges, as well as integration of the PDMPs with electronic health records. So there are a lot of things that we think will make a big difference with the prescription drug monitoring programs, and that we think probably has more promise than some of the other things that we've been looking at. Dr. Jones?
Yeah, I would say that I think that the triplicate forms are still used in some states, and there's some evidence to suggest that states that use triplicate forms had lower overdose death rates compared to states that didn't. But I do think, as Dr. Frieden said, the PDMP and moving towards electronic prescribing and those types of things may have sort of a lesser need to use triplicate forms, and they're coming in to replace that. But again, it's getting that information in real time to the right people who are making the prescribing decisions.
Next question, please.
Thank you. We'll once again go back to Nadia Koenig from CNN. Ma'am, your line is open.
Thank you so much. Sorry about that earlier. I was just wondering, in the data that you reviewed, was there any indication of which specific opioids perhaps were prescribed more frequently amongst women, or was there any sense of, in terms of specificity on those prescription drugs?
I didn't hear the question, so I'll ask Dr. Jones if he heard it to respond.
Yes, so this is Chris Jones. In the overdose data from the National Vital Statistics System, we don't have the ability to look at particular opioids other than methadone, and we did not do that for this analysis. In the emergency department data, there is the ability to look at particular opioids, not particular formulations, but you could look at things like hydrocodone, oxycodone, and those are the two primary drugs associated with misuse or abuse emergency department visits among both men and women.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Our next question is from Timothy Martin from Wall Street Journal.
Hi, thanks for taking my call and questions. I have two questions. First one, can you guys get into the underlying reasons behind the discrepancy in the percentage of suicides involving drug overdoses between men and women? And my second question, could you also get into the reasons behind why minority women had higher rates than white women? Thank you.
I'll answer the first of those and then ask Dr. Jones to answer the second. First off, it's important to be clear that the overwhelming majority of these overdose deaths are unintentional. They're not suicides. So more than 70% of the deaths among women were unintentional deaths, and only about 12% were intentional or suicidal. men are more likely to use a gun to kill themselves, and women are more likely to use pills. But still, the vast majority of these deaths are not suicides. They're unintentional overdoses. Dr. Jones?
Sure. I would just add that overall, the suicide rates between men and women are comparable, but as Dr. Frieden said, the means of accomplishing the suicide may be different between men and women. And as stated in our information, 34% of the suicides among women were drug-related compared to 8% among men. As far as your question on race ethnicity, we didn't break that down by intent. What we typically see, especially with the prescription drugs and the opioids, the non-Hispanic white or the white population and the American Indian and Alaska Native populations have the highest overdose death rates, which is consistent among males as well. And that's consistent among many of the other morbidity measures of prescription drug abuse, such as treatment admissions or emergency department visits.
Next question, please.
And our next question is from David Sell from Philadelphia Inquirer.
Thank you for taking the call. A question about pharmaceutical company marketing. Can you attribute any of the increase in what you would describe as the problem to the prevalence of pharmaceutical advertising, whether it be TV or other forms of marketing?
I think there's already been a legal settlement with one of the companies that has made a large payment because of misleading or inaccurate marketing directly to physicians. So clearly, marketing is part of the reason why we've seen this increase. Dr. Jones may want to comment further, and at this point, I'm going to have to step off the line so Dr. Jones will answer the remaining questions. Dr. Jones?
I think that we have to look at all ways that people are provided education around the appropriate use of these medications and figure out what are the best means to make sure that people are getting accurate information.
Okay, just to follow up, accuracy is, unfortunately, sometimes accuracy gets lost in the translation. Just sometimes the volume of advertising can have an effect. Do you think that's part of the problem?
For this particular analysis, we didn't look at it, so I think it would be difficult for us to try to draw conclusions there.
Next question, please.
And our next question is from Carmen Foreman from The Oklahoman.
Hi. Being from Oklahoma, one of the states with the highest rates of abuse, I'm curious, did you find any similarities in states with the highest drug overdose death rate?
So we generally see a trend that states that have higher sales or higher non-medical use rates have the highest rates of drug overdose deaths. But for this particular analysis, we didn't really look at that. We just looked at the variation between states and overdose deaths. And again, as you can see in our materials, there is a pretty wide variation in different state drug overdose death rates.
Okay.
Next question, please.
Our next question is from Judy Foreman from WBUR.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I have a number of questions. In terms of the addiction rate, the government's own figures are a 3 to 25% rate of addiction, but in people with no prior history of alcohol or substance abuse, it's about 3%. So I think it's lower than the public and CDC seems to believe. I heard no mention of the recent Institute of Medicine report saying 100 million Americans are in pain, chronic pain, and a number of those are in severe pain. And you mentioned the state of Washington, but I didn't hear any mention of the Pulitzer Prize-winning series from the state of Washington showing that the policy of switching people from sort of standard opioids to methadone resulted in a vast increase in deaths among poor people. And I know you mentioned prescription monitoring programs, but there's this CDC's own study by Paolozzi a couple years ago showed that these prescription monitoring programs did not reduce overdose and death. And lastly, if I have the right numbers in mind, in 2010, CDC reported 651 deaths from opioid overdoses, but rarely does it get mentioned that only 29% of those were opioids alone. The rest were with benzodiazepines and alcohol and other things in addition. So I guess the bottom line question is, is this a political statement that CDC is making based on information from the group called PROP? And is it really an accurate portrayal of the opioid problem in this country?
This particular vital signs, again, we wanted to focus in on women, and I think we're representing the data that we have and we've analyzed here at CDC. I agree with the comment that certainly the combination of medications is something that is certainly from a clinical perspective needs to be monitored and addressed. And as we've noted in our materials, opioids and benzodiazepines are often prescribed in combination together. And so we do think it is important that clinicians be aware of that and monitor for, again, checking prescription drug monitoring programs for the combination of products that may increase risk. One thing that I would say is that generally about 50% of all overdose deaths involve at least one other identified drug. And as you correctly stated in our JAMA research letter from February, about 30% of the overdose deaths actually involved no other drug. And again, alcohol is involved in roughly less than 25% of the overdose deaths. So again, we're singling out opioids because that's where we see the greatest increase in overdose deaths. But certainly we don't want to diminish the impact that combinations of other CNS active drugs may have, especially in women who are more likely to be prescribed opioids and benzodiazepines.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Stacey Singer from the Palm Beach Post in Florida.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I guess I want to ask you a question from sort of a consumer perspective. We keep seeing these just horrendous and alarming numbers coming out about the impact of OxyContin and oxycodone. I can't think of any other drug that would have a safety profile like this that would be allowed to stay on the market. So I don't really understand, you know, why this is still on the market. I know you're not the FDA, but how is the CDC working with the FDA when it gets data like this? Or are you guys not talking to each other? Because that's how it looks down here in the States. Thanks.
We routinely work with the FDA to understand the public health implications for both substance abuse, drug overdose deaths, as well as pain. And we provide information like our vital signs, which can help FDA and other people make appropriate regulatory decisions and really trying to strike the balance of appropriate pain management and appropriate interventions to reduce drug overdose deaths.
Alon, we have time for a few more questions, please.
And as a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question is from Misty Crane from the Columbus Dispatch.
Hi, thank you. I was just curious, to what degree do you think lack of insurance coverage is contributing to pain patients not getting referrals for the non-medical treatments that were mentioned, cognitive therapy, exercise, physical therapy?
I think that is certainly an important issue, and CDC, in our grand rounds that we did on prescription drug overdose back in early 2011, we specifically brought up insurance coverage as an issue that needed to be explored to make sure that people are not being prescribed a cheap drug like methadone just simply because that's the most efficient cost, lowest cost approach to treating a person's pain, and that all options should be available and should be provided because the evidence for other types of alternative treatments such as physical therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, they show benefit for people in pain. So we think it is appropriate that full list of comprehensive services be offered so that people can have appropriate pain management.
Thank you.
Okay, Alon, one more question, please.
And our final question today is from Michelle Merrill, Hospital Employee Health Newsletter.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question. Dr. Frieden noted that the highest rate of overdose deaths was among women ages 44 to 54, and, you know, we kind of tend to think of drug abuse problems being among younger people. I was just wondering what, if you have a theory as to why older women in particular would have a problem. I mean, is it a result of more pain? And as a secondary question, I'm also wondering if you've done any research relating occupationally related pain and the, you know, the workers' comp system or whatever to opioid prescriptions?
So I think there are multiple factors as to why the highest overdose death rates would be seen in the 45 to 54-year-old age group. And part of that is that these would be people who have lived a life that potentially would have chronic conditions where they would be more likely to be treated with opioids. I think that it's possible they may have been on opioids for longer so that they're receiving higher doses or receiving them on a more chronic nature. So, again, there's evidence to support that that would increase the risk. When you look at the emergency department data, you do see it skew a little bit younger. So you do see the younger folks, 18 to 34-year-olds, having emergency department visits. But really, it's pretty comparable rates among both the 25 to 34-year-olds all the way through the 45 to 54-year-olds. So I think there are a number of factors at play. What's interesting is that in the data that we looked at for the death, the largest increases over the time period 1999 to 2010 were seen in the 45 to 54-year-old age group and the 55 and 64-year-old age group, which I think is consistent with the general trend that during the same time the opioid analgesics were the primary driver of the increase. So I do think that there's a connection there with the types of pain and types of treatment that that age group might be receiving.
And what about occupationally related pain? Any information on that that would connect
with
it?
We didn't do anything specific for this analysis, but many researchers within the workers' comp group have looked at this, and certainly there are many issues around work-related injuries where people are receiving opioids for an acute injury and then they end up being on opioids for some time later and having higher rates of overdose death in that group. So there people like Gary Franklin in Washington State who've really looked extensively at the relationship around opioid prescribing and workers' comp. I would suggest that that would be a good resource to further delve into.
Okay, Alon, this concludes our call. Thanks to everyone who joined us. A transcript of this call will be available on the CDC Media Relations webpage later this afternoon. And should individuals have follow-up questions or need additional information, they can call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. Thanks once again for joining us.
Thank you. And this does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.